I'm Ricky Bevington, broadcasting live from under the sunset here on Skyline Park, the rooftop midway at Ponce City Market in Atlanta's old Fourth Ward neighborhood. A beautiful view of the Atlanta skyline right now. Tracy V. Wilson and Holly Fry host the popular podcast Stuff You Missed in History Class right here in their offices of How Stuff Works at Ponce City Market. And they join me now to talk about what it's like to produce a history podcast in a 100-year-old building. Also, some of their personal connections with the Sears Company, which built this building in 1926. Welcome to you both.
Thank you so much.
So for the few listeners, very few, who may not know your podcast, just tell us about the program.
So we talk about history that's been overlooked in some way. A lot of times it's things that have been overlooked because maybe they might seem insignificant or silly, like the history of sewing machines. But in reality, that was really important. It completely changed the way people made their own clothing. It changed the lives, especially of women, who had a lot more time to do other things around the house.
It also changed patent law.
Big changes to patent law. And then we also talk about things that might also be overlooked but are really, really important. So we, for example, have a whole series we've collected over the years of episodes that connect the dots between slavery and today, and how, like, there wasn't slavery and then nothing and Jim Crow and nothing and today. There's a whole series of events that connects all of that together.
Mm-hmm. And I should mention for listeners, what you're hearing in the background, of course, is a very rowdy midway at happy hour. So people are playing mini golf and horse derby. I think skee ball is getting particularly rowdy right now. It's a really good time on the roof of Ponce City Market. So where do you look for inspiration and find great stories and research?
Absolutely everywhere. Nothing is off limits. Inspiration comes from all over the place. One of the things that I really loved researching for our show, and it's one of my favorite set of episodes still, I'm a big Disney nerd, and I super love the Haunted Mansion. And so we did a two-part episode about how the Haunted Mansion was developed. And it's one of those stories that it literally spans decades. And it seems like a weird thing maybe to talk about, but when people realize, one, the Disney Company was not always this moneyed juggernaut, there were times they struggled, and two, they had the same kind of problems that you have today if you're on like a big project at work and it drags out and people fight and there's all kinds of drama. Like, that happens all the time. Similarly, we recently filmed some footage at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. And while we were there, Charles Bolden, who's the administrator of NASA, was talking about how no one knows that much about James Webb, who the James Webb Space Telescope is named after. So I'm happy to say we have an upcoming episode about him and the Apollo program and how that all fits into the bigger history of the United States and really the globe.
So how do you narrow it down then if everything's a source of inspiration?
Lately, what's been narrowing it down is the current political climate in the United States. Post-election, it seems like every other day there's a comment that suddenly becomes a headline that relates to something in history that we've been talking about. And we go, okay, that's going up to the top of the list now.
Yeah, the list has bubbled in very exciting ways in recent weeks.
Can you maybe give us a little political preview?
Oh, well, we've talked for a long time about wanting to have an episode about the internment camps during World War II, and with that recently being held up as a precedent for a Muslim registration list, that's, we kind of want to dive into what that was actually about. And so that's been on the list for a long time, but it's higher on the list than it was last week.
Yeah, it just rocketed to the top couple of spots.
So how long have you been doing this podcast together as a team?
We're coming up on 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys have great energy dynamic. Did you know each other beforehand?
Yes, we did. Okay. We actually started podcasting because we were at a party. We had been doing other jobs at House of Works, and our boss heard us being snarky at a party and said, I think you guys should have a podcast together.
And then we did.
Yeah.
It was a different podcast from this one, but yeah.
Yeah.
So, and your podcast is produced right here at, mm-hmm. at Ponce City Market, and this building has its own incredible history. It was once the southeastern headquarters for Sears Roebuck. It served as a warehouse and showroom of agricultural farming products for thousands of farmers across Georgia and really across the South. It was the southeastern hub, the railroad hub for Sears. They would bring in all their stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So what can you tell me about the era? What was going on in America when 1926, when Sears decides to build this massive warehouse?
Yeah, they got the property in 1925, and then 1926, the building was actually dedicated. So we have the Roaring Twenties going on at that point. Prohibition is really in full swing. In 1925, that was the first year that the Grand Ole Opry was broadcast. And then the following year, 1926, DeFord Bailey, who we've talked about on the show before when we talked about harmonicas, first black man to perform on the Grand Ole Opry. 1926 was also the first year that Winnie the Pooh existed as a book. It was published for the first time. Houdini also died that year, which is a little sad. Right at the same time, like within those couple of years, there were a lot of things that we remember a lot today, like The Great Gatsby, which is just such a hallmark of that time period, came out in 1925. The Gnome Serum Run, which we've talked about on the mm-hmm. podcast, which was the life-saving delivery by sled dog of diphtheria serum to Gnome. That happened in 1925, sort of as the building was being built.
And here, this location is, it wasn't the first time people had been coming to this particular part of Metro Atlanta, right? There were warm springs here.
A man named
an amusement park?
Yeah, a man named Dr. Henry L. Wilson nicknamed it the Ponce Springs after Ponce de Leon.
Who was searching for
the Fountain of Youth.
Fountain of Youth, that was
and
it.
So the whole idea was the spring water would heal people's sicknesses, and so he named it after Ponce. We're not saying his name the way he actually said it. We're saying it the way people pronounce Ponce de Leon today in Atlanta. And then after that, it was an amusement park and then a baseball field. And then Sears bought the property and built this building.
And Tracy, I understand that your family actually has a personal connection
with
Sears.
My grandmother worked at Sears for as long as I can remember. She actually retired from Sears. And in 1983, which was the year that Cabbage Patch dolls were the thing to get, people were literally knocking each other down to get them. She used her power of being a Sears employee to secret one away for me to have as my Christmas present. And it is one of my fondest memories of my grandmother, who passed away in 2006. And whenever I walk into the building on the side, the Ponce side, where it has the Sears and Roebuck carving in the wall, I'm reminded of my grandmother and what a great memory that was.
And Cabbage Patches.
Patch dolls.
Which women of a certain generation
oh, yes.
have lots of memories about.
Yes.
And you bought them through the Sears catalog,
mm-hmm.
right?
You could.
Yep.
If you were lucky enough. Yeah, the Sears catalog is sort of an interesting story in and of itself, and it's really sort of the story of America and consumerism. It was first published in 1888, which was kind of an interesting time because the Homestead Act of 1862 had kind of encouraged people to move west and go into places where they were not retail hubs, so they needed something that they could access and have shipped to them. There were also some interesting things going on with the Postal Service, where they sort of made some provisions for bulk mailings to be really, really economical. So it made it really great for catalogs that they could distribute to a wider market. And what's really interesting is some of the slogans that Richard Sears would come up with for his catalog, because he really wanted to pitch like that this is an important sort of homegrown part of America. And some of them were called like the Book of Bargains, a money saver for everyone. Like they would have their own little kooky titles. The Cheapest Supply House on Earth was one of their subtitles for Sears during the catalog era. Our Trade Reaches Around the World, because they were, again, in addition to bulk mailings, the ability to ship things further and further was developing. And then one of my favorites is, we can't afford to lose a customer. Like, they were kind of suggesting that the catalog industry was kind of, you know, one where they didn't have huge margins, so they needed every one of you to buy in and really be a part of the Sears story. And eventually, of course, it started out just selling watches and jewelry, but it expanded to include things like clothing and farm equipment and even buggies. And in many ways, this really parallels the modern experience. When industries like Amazon started developing and other online shopping options, there was such a furor over the loss of brick and mortar stores. But in fact, really the large scale consumer market initiated in the U.S. as a ship to your home model, which is kind of a fascinating thing. And what I really love is that the Sears company was kind of shockingly self-aware that they were representing what the U.S. was during any given time it was being published. And in 1943, their company newspaper, which was called the Sears News Graphic, printed this note in the catalog that said that the catalog, quote, serves as a mirror of our times, recording for future historians today's desires, habits, customs, and mode of living. Which is shockingly self-aware for a retailer. But then we get into one of my favorite parts of Sears history, and it was not so much part of the catalog, but they had a really amazing art program that Vincent Price curated for them where
Who
you
knew?
Could buy original works of art through Sears.
And it wasn't just original works of art. We're talking real art.
Yeah, they were the original pieces that he and his wife Mary at the time would travel around the world all the time for work, but also to look for art collections and buy originals, everything from, you know, a Picasso to a Dali, everything in between, the great masters. Some things were smaller, like etchings versus like the paintings that went for much more. But you could walk into your local Sears. In some cases, you could walk into your local Sears and meet Vincent Price and purchase a piece of art directly from him.
So just for the audience who just caught the end of that, you used to be able to buy a Picasso at Sears.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really a fascinating and kind of brain-bending thing to consider.
So you recently had a podcast where you featured the daughter of Vincent Price, who, by the way, for anybody who might be too young to remember Vincent Price, this breaks my heart to have to explain that he's a great actor.
Yeah.
Right. Victoria Price actually talked about this aspect of her parents' work when she was little, and we actually have an audio clip from your podcast. So let's hear Victoria Price discussing Vincent Price's work with art in Sears.
And speaking of his love of art and the democratization of art, I wanted to talk to you some about the Sears Roebuck art program. Because even when I mention this to people like, oh no, Vincent Price was buying art for Sears Roebuck to then sell to the masses, they think that what he was doing was buying art and they were making prints. But no, he was buying originals and Sears Roebuck was cultivating those in galleries and selling them.
Yeah, an amazing thing. Yeah, you could buy a Picasso or a Dali or a Vuillard or a Whistler on your Sears credit card with a money-back guarantee. Is that crazy or what?
That is really quite funny.
I know.
Yeah, that program really took up so much of his life and was such a passion for him.
Yes.
You speak in your book so much about both your father and mother working on that sort of tirelessly and constantly traveling the world and finding new pieces to add. It's one of those things that still blows me away. I think most people today would have some difficulty accepting this information because it's so outside.
Yeah, I say that and people laugh, you know, but I can't tell you the number of people who have come up to me and said, I began buying art because I bought my first piece from your dad at Sears Roebuck. It was a serious and important thing, and it really, really changed some people's lives.
That was Victoria Price, daughter of actor Vincent Price, talking about her father on the podcast, Stuff You Missed in History Class. I'm speaking with the hosts of that podcast, Tracy V. Wilson and Holly Fry. So you guys don't call yourselves historians.
Right.
Even though we just heard a long explanation of the Sears catalog, an incredible amount of history in the last 10 minutes of this conversation, why aren't you historians?
Well, so I have a dear friend named Amy who is actually a history teacher here in Atlanta who insists that we are historians because of the care and approach that we take in what we're doing. But neither of us has a degree in history. My degree is in literature, although I went to the University of North Carolina at Asheville, which has a very large humanities program as part of its core graduation requirements. And it was really studying humanities that I realized I loved history. And I loved looking at history through art and through literature and through all the different things that add up together to be a worldview. And that has really informed how I work on this show. Holly, your degree is in
theater and film studies. And I also studied English Romantic literature, which both touch on history but are not particularly history focused. If you had asked me even 8 years ago, I would have told you I did not particularly care for history. It wasn't really until I had this revelation, because I was working in a library and I was doing acquisitions and I kept ordering books, and my boss pointed out, you order a lot of historical clothing books. And I was like, oh, that's my in. It was just the schooling angle of it wasn't what appealed to me, but being able to explore it through that lens of culture was really fascinating.
Well, I, for one, am a big fan of your podcast, and I wish you luck in many more years of telling us what we missed in history class.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for joining me. Tracy V. Wilson and Holly Fry are hosts of the podcast Stuff You Missed in History Class, produced right here at Pont City Market in Atlanta's Old Fourth Ward neighborhood. You can hear a new podcast from this team every Monday and Wednesday, and you can download it from iTunes and other sources.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. I'm Ricky Bevington, broadcasting live from Skyline Park. This is the Midway on the roof of Pont City Market. You can hear some rowdy crowds. They're playing some Midway games like skee ball and ring toss. This is 88.5 GPB Atlanta.
Support for GPB programs comes from our listeners. And Spivey Hall at Clayton State presenting a Chanticleer Christmas with the Atlanta favorite 12-voice ensemble performing music to celebrate the holiday season. Saturday, November 26th at 2 p.m. Information at spiveyhall.org. And the Georgia Center for Nonprofits hosting Georgia Gives Day on November 17th, an annual day for giving when Georgians come together to support their most cherished causes. gagivesday.org.
The financial crisis peaked 8 years ago, but the president of the Minneapolis Fed says we are not through it yet.
We're still recovering, right? When I look at the country today, we're divided as a country. There's a lot of anger out there. I think a lot of that started with the financial crisis.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Too big to fail, another plan to fix it. The story next time on Marketplace.
Marketplace is coming up in just about 10 minutes at 6 o'clock right here on 88.5 GPB Atlanta.
Support for GPB comes from our listener members. And Metroderm PC, providing skin cancer detection and treatment and offering skin care services. Three offices in the metro area. Metroderm encourages annual skin care checkups. Metroderm.org. And Valdosta State University, offering more than 100 majors, advanced degrees, and online courses. VSU students launch their futures on a campus where lifelong relationships and lifelong learners are created. More at valdosta.edu.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.